Special May meeting, April 11th, 2023, 4 o'clock. Item number two, Notification Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska revised state statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Fowler.
Here.
Dell.
Here.
Geezer.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Sherman. Here. Item four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Geezer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Sherman?
Aye. Item five, proof of publication of meeting notice. We have proof of publication. It will become part of the record. Item number six, Respond Sediment Dam Evaluation. Martin Cleveland.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good afternoon, I should say. If you go to the map first, Bill, that's the last thing in the sequence. Tonight with me, I have, or this afternoon, I actually have Pat Engelbert with HDR help me answer questions that you may have at the end of the presentation. But looks like this map's bigger than the wall we have to put on. But basically, the Respond Sediment Dam is south of 370. You can see it on the map as a yellow label. It's actually a tributary to the main Respond Lake, Chaco Hills recreation area. It drains all the way back to Gretna, basically goes past 204th Street. In fact, WP4 is actually on that tributary up in Gretna. And so back in 2000, the Corps of Engineers with the NRD built this dam on this tributary. It was actually a sediment dam. There are six different tributaries coming into the Respond Lake, and this is one of six. And the district put, in most cases, just built in-house, built these dams to retain sediment that we clean out occasionally rather than clean out the main lake. And so the Corps of Engineers found money to help build this. It's on their property. But once they built it, they turned it over to the district. But they provided the design, built the structure. I think they paid probably most of the cost of the construction. Probably part of it was paid by the NRD. I'm not sure what percentage. This was done by Jerry Bowen many, many years ago, so it's beyond my recollection. But so it was built in 2000, turned over to the district in 2005. So DNR inspects this structure, I think, about every year. And so they've been going through this process where they kind of reanalyze some of these structures and say, okay, is this structure adequate or not, you know, under current standards today. And this particular structure, they came back and said, actually, it should have a poor rating because it could possibly lead to the failure of Highway 370. The structure would fail. It would probably overtop the dam. Well, I should say that the Bristol Spillway is kind of the main flow where the top of the dam is where it normally would flow. That isn't adequate. So what happens is it wants to go across the top of the dam, which is beyond the spillway, and it could then eventually overtop 370, which is not good. You don't want to have a dam overtop. You don't want to have a road overtop. So as a result of that analysis they made on this dam, they said to the NRD, you need to take care of this problem. You need to find out what's going on, if there is a problem, which that's why we would like to hire a consultant to actually analyze this, evaluate, is there a problem? If there is a problem, how do we fix it? And so we did talk to the Corps about trying to get their assistance to help with, you know, even the evaluation, and there was no help there, basically. They turned it over to the district back in 2005. It's your structure. So that's kind of their attitude on it. So we looked at and thought about how we approach this situation. In the past, we've had HDR do a number of projects for us, rehab projects. They did four of our dams, district dams, on behalf of the NRCS, rehab these dams down near Bellevue and one in Washington County called W3. They've also repaired, designed repairs for Kenwood Lake and also D45, which is another dam up in Omaha for us. They're very skilled in knowing how to fix old dam problems, you might say. In this case, this dam isn't as old. It's only about 20 years old. But it's a case where we think probably what's happened is the design, some assumptions they made were not correct. The assumption was that the dam would settle, or the spillway would settle, and didn't settle like they predicted. So as a result, the spillway now isn't big enough, basically, for the flow. And so as a result, the dam wants to be overtopped by this flow event. And Pat can get into more details if we need to on that. But so we'd recommend, I guess, that you waive your policy, which right now says $100,000 is your limit for management approval for contracts without going through the RFP process. So we're, in this case, recommending, because we think HDR is best qualified to waive those policies, hire HDR to do this evaluation and preliminary design. Once the preliminary design is figured out, then you have to make some decisions what you're going to do. But I think the bottom line is you have to do something because this is a problem out there, a liability for the district. So that's kind of an overview, and I'll be happy to answer questions along with Pat about what HDR would do and also about the policy, too, if you have any questions in that regard.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Clarify something for me. The Corps said something's wrong with it, but we're not going to tell you what it is, so we have to hire HDR to tell us what they think is wrong with it. Am I simplifying that too much?
Actually, what happened, DNR, which is the Department of Natural Resources, has a dam safety group, and they do some, you might say, free engineering analysis of what's going on there, and it's kind of a rough estimate. It maybe isn't exact, but it's like a rough estimate, and their rough estimate says this dam would likely fail during the 100-year flood event, for example. It would fail. Their prediction of that. And so
DNR.
DNR, not the Corps. The Corps actually thinks that their design was correct, although when they were presented with the fact that the dam didn't settle like they predicted, I think they kind of realized, hey, yeah, there is a problem here, but they aren't willing to pay for any engineering analysis of that. But what happened basically is the dam was supposed to settle 2 feet, and it didn't settle 2 feet. The center of the dam, where the water flows over top of the dam, there's actually a concrete soil cement spillway, and it flows over top of that. That's too high. And so if you were to lower that 2 feet, it might be okay. That's one of the things that HDR would look at, is what are the alternatives to fix this problem? You maybe raise the levee of the dam some. Maybe you make an auxiliary spillway. Maybe you lower this concrete some to make it actually have the proper flow characteristics. But DNR, the state of Nebraska, is saying you got a problem here. And they're the dam safety people. They look at these dams once a year if they're high hazard or significant hazard, and they analyze, is there a problem with the dam? And so in this case, they're saying you have a problem. You need to fix it. And, of course, it's a problem for us, too, because our insurance company now has wind of this, and so they may say we're going to take that dam off our list of insured properties because we think there's a risk there to the insurance company. So there's a risk there, too, that long term on what would happen as far as insurance goes if we keep this, if we ignore it, basically. So I think the bottom line is you probably can't ignore it, but, you know, what is the best way to approach how to resolve it, I think.
So we're I guess, hoping HDR, assuming it passes here, will find that nothing's wrong, and there you go.
That would be the
DNR. Take it. I mean, a flooding over top in the dam, it might flood 370 one day, and the next day it'll be drained in the Chelco or in the first manner.
Right. I mean, that DNR is actually open.
I'm simplifying it.
But. Yeah. They're actually open to that idea. If they're wrong, they said, we're willing to hear that from a consultant that we're wrong, but prove it to us. They want to be, we have to prove it to them that that's the case. I think realistically, we don't think that's going to happen because we know that the top is higher than, we actually surveyed, our staff surveyed it and realized that it's actually higher than it should be. Unfortunately, this wasn't known 20 years ago when the dam was taken over by the district. We unfortunately didn't know that, I guess. If we would have, we would have said, Corps, fix it at that time. We didn't know that. So
you know who designed it initially?
It was designed by the Corps of Engineers, but I'm not sure who designed
in-house?
It.
In-house?
In-house, I think.
Right.
And they made an assumption that the soils were soft, and so as a result, being soil, the base being soft, the material is going to settle. And after 20 years, it hasn't settled really, so you could assume that it's not going to settle anymore. It probably already has settled in the first year or two after it was constructed. So their assumption, which, you know, all engineers make assumptions on projects, unfortunately, sometimes are wrong. And this is a case where their assumption is wrong, and we certainly haven't given up with the court totally. We're going to probably try to, if we ever get a conclusion that this is faulty, the structure needs to be repaired, we're still going to work that system to try to get them to provide some money to fix the problem. But there's no guarantee of that because our contract with them basically says we took over the project. So they can always point back to that and say, well, you took over the project, too bad it's your project. So we would still like to, like Amanda and I both feel there's a potential that we can work them to try to get some money on this project, but not for engineering, maybe for construction possibly. There's a possible hope. If we can prove to them that what's happened here, I think maybe then they're more likely to help us out on it. But the Corps has difficulty fixing projects once they build them. They don't have really a mechanism, unfortunately. It's kind of like you're stuck with them once you assume them. And so it'd be nice to have people take care of their problems when they create them, but it doesn't always happen that way, unfortunately. So anyway, that's kind of the long answer to your question.
Before we further discussion, can we have a motion on staff recommendation on this item?
Okay, I'll make the staff recommendation.
Okay. Mary, I think you had your hand, and then we'll ask the public if they want to make some comments. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple of questions. One, if the PPO committee waives the policy, or at least they vote to waive the policy, and ultimately the whole board votes to waive the policy for this step, would this, and you already hard set on HDR, if we waive the policy, what I'm getting at, should this go out to public bid past 100,000? Or, so that's what I'm just asking, should this portion, if we waive the policy?
There would be, the policy, of course, is only this professional services we're talking about. So professional services, basically what you do typically is you get proposals in, you negotiate with that selected consultant, so you really kind of negotiate with that person. But then the construction part of it, which is what you're probably referring to, Larry, we would get bids on that. That had to be bid out, because I'm sure it'd be more than 100,000. You'd probably bid it, and you get competitive bids on that, so you take the lowest bid. But unlike consultant services, usually aren't bid, they're negotiated. So you actually select a consultant through the RFP process. If there's over 100,000, then you negotiate that price with them. But usually they provide you with the scope of services, and you kind of talk about what needs to be done, and the price is arrived at. But it's not really a bid thing. But the construction is certainly right. You're bidding that activity. You do construction.
Well, thank you, Martin. Sure. And then the other question, if the valuation says we have to reconstruct the dam, I would understand that that little pool of water would be drained. But that is a fishery, though, to a certain extent, right? So
it's pretty shallow.
I've seen people fish in there. Do they catch anything?
Yeah. It's a nice wetland area complex. It's probably less than 10 feet deep. It's 8 feet or something like that at the most. But it does have fish in it, I'm sure, frying things.
Well, then if they redo the whole thing and maybe make it even better. So just wondered about that.
We may not need to dewater the lake. It depends on what the conclusion is, I guess, exactly. If you're going to just elevate the dam, you wouldn't have to lower the lake to do that, for example. But if you're going to do something with the actual pipe through the dam, maybe you'd have to lower it. But I think realistically that pipe is going to probably change. It's basically going to be an issue of lowering the top of the concrete, which is called soil cement, the steps, in other words, or raising the sides or cutting the auxiliary spillway in. So there's a couple of different options that probably exist. You've got to look at the least expensive approach, the best approach, I guess, and hopefully least expensive too. But it's possible that it wouldn't impact the lake as far as dewatering it.
Is there anyone from the public which have any questions regarding this item? Well, directors, any other directors got questions?
I had a quick question. So it's been inspected every year, you're saying, for 19 years, and now this year it's suddenly bad? It went from acceptable to poor?
I think what happened, DNR decided to do analysis on a number of dams, and this is one of them. They chose to do that. They had in past years, they just assumed, I think, that the thing was okay. They didn't really look at the analysis, but they actually analyzed it. This dam, because of where it's at, because it's near 370. But you're right, for years they said it was fine, and just mirror, it's an issue of hydraulic capacity. It's not an issue that the dam is really unsafe otherwise. It says it just can't handle the required flow, which is a 500-year flow event. It can't handle that, according to their analysis. So they did some in-house work, and, you know, it's possible their analysis is wrong. There's always a small possibility, but it's probably not likely, but it's possible. And so, yeah, that's a good question. Why all of a sudden it had a problem? You know, otherwise the structure is, it has some wear and tear because it's 20 years old, but otherwise it's in decent shape probably.
Thanks.
So. Any other questions?
I have a question. Pat, are you pretty confident $143,000 is going to get the job done with you?
So what that covers, Director Teaser, is the preliminary analysis. So we will update the hydrology. I think there was a question about why this year. Just in the last year or two, NOAA has updated their rainfall frequencies, which are a little bit higher than they used to be, so that could impact capacity. And Director Thompson, to your question, so the auxiliary spillway is about 500 feet wide, and it only has right now the capacity to convey about 2 feet of water before it overtops the embankment. It didn't settle the additional 1.5 feet roughly that they thought, so instead of almost 4 feet of water being able to overtop, you only have 2 feet of water.
So that capacity has dramatically shrunk. So we're going to look at three alternatives to get that capacity back what it was originally designed for. So we can get it from the poor rating that the DNR has right now back up to a satisfactory rating that it can pass the 500-year event. So we're looking at three things, as Marvin had mentioned, either raising the dam, we're going to look at maybe providing an additional spillway off to the east side, or lowering that original auxiliary spillway. So that $143,000 will get geotechnical borings. You know, at the dam, we're going to pour right through the concrete, see what kind of shape that is in, see what the subsurface condition is in. Then we'll update the hydrology and look at three alternatives. And then we'll develop, you know, roughly 30% design drawings, just to have a good idea of what the cost is going to be to the district, as well as make sure it's compliant with both 404, Section 404 wetland, environmental waters, and then Section 408. It is a core structure, so we'll have to go through the 408 process, and we need to carry it roughly to that 30% design in order to have documents sufficient for them to review. So that's what the $143,000 is for, Director Teaser. And yes, we can get it to that.
That's why I wanted it here.
Okay.
Thank you.
To make a short story
long. Any other questions? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Ballard?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Sherman?
Yes. Item number 7, Contract Amendment 4 with HDR for WP4. Lori Lasser.
Good afternoon. So we're here today with another contract amendment for WP4. This is amendment number 4. A little update, we are now under construction. That started towards the end of March, and we hope to be moving along with that fairly quickly so far. It seems like everything's going well. So a couple of things, a couple of reasons for this amendment. First, as you know, we rejected bids initially because they were much higher than we thought they were going to be. So we did have to rebid the project, which included reworking some of the plans and specifications. And the second reason that for the contract amendment is we had to go through the plotting process when we purchased a parcel of land. That is not something that the district normally has to do. We're normally buying larger tracts of land that don't fall under the state requirements for assigning tax numbers, and this is not a process I understand all that well, but we did have to do that on one smaller piece of land there, and that held everything up. We had extra drawings, extra meetings with the City of Gretna Planning Commission and City of Gretna Council, with that, we have incurred about $64,872 in additional costs that were not originally scoped. I will say that the rebidding services, or the rebidding of the project, did save us over $1 million. So this is well worth it. I do have John Peterson here today from JEO, who's a subcontractor to HDR and doing the design on this structure. If there are any questions.
Thanks, Scott. We can have a motion on this item.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Johnson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Gaff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Chairman?
All right. Thank you. Item number 8, interlocal agreement with City of Omaha and CHI for Sorensen Trail. Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. I've got page 2, the area map. This is a new trail corridor that we've been working on for a little while, and on the map you can see north and south the Yellow Street is 77th Street, and east-west is Sorensen. So the working title of the project is Sorensen Trail, but more specifically, the white street that runs east-west on the top side of the corridor is Girard Street. Doing all right?
I think
you're
going
to talk.
Go ahead.
Oh,
talk louder. Talk
louder. Okay. Girard Street. And so the more specific name that we're working from is the Girard Connection. Starting at Girard Street, following on an abandoned railroad corridor on the north side of the Emanuel Hospital property, connecting down to 72nd Street, providing access from the neighborhoods kind of in the area there down to 72nd. This is a part of a larger project that we are anticipating over the next few years. If you go to the next page, it's an aerial map. You can see the wooded area on the north side of the hospital property. This is very similar to the Field Club Trail, abandoned rail corridor that was cut out, leveled to be at a grade that the trains could easily traverse. So it is flat and wide and available to be converted in a rails-to-trails conversion type of project. You can see that the letter B on this map shows the trail coming up off the rail corridor back up to grade at 72nd Street, providing access for both employees and any potential patients at the hospital to go out and use the trail for recreation or even some rehabilitation. And the hospital has mentioned an interest in that for everyone who's on their campus. I mentioned the larger kind of regional project. Bill, I'm going to ask you to go back one page. You can see that at 72nd Street, the trail comes up and ties in so that there is access on the west or the southwest end there. We have submitted a project for federal funding to reestablish the underpass connection under 72nd Street on the rail corridor connecting to the southwest where Sorensen Sorensen Parkway continues further west. And so that is a separate project that we anticipate to occur in a few years. This project is preparing for the future underpass project, which has been designated 80% federal funding. And we would continue the trail connection under 72nd Street into the north side of Sorensen, which then continues further west all the way up to the Keystone Trail, which is in the process of being connected north up to Cunningham. So this would provide access from the Keystone Trail along the Sorensen Parkway corridor to the hospital and to the neighborhoods on the north and east side of the hospital property. We're breaking this into a couple phases because federal aid projects work best when you have very narrow scope, very limited impacts to the adjacent area with very high dollar intensity. So this is a preparation project to complete that next project, which has federal aid that will probably be, again, probably about 3 or 4 years from now. We've been working with the City of Omaha and with CHI. Both have indicated support for the project. CHI currently owns all of the rail corridor property. They are prepared to transfer the deed to that property over to the City of Omaha. The entity will pay for the design and construction of the project, and then the City of Omaha will operate and maintain the project from there forward. So this is a type of arrangement that we've worked with several times with other agencies in the past, and I'm very excited about what this corridor can be in an area where there are limited recreation and active transportation and natural resource opportunities available. Connecting west to Keystone will provide great benefit to everyone in the area. And if you continue to look further east, this is part of a corridor that we talked about in October 2020 as part of the connectivity plan.
This is from Keystone all the way to Riverfront Trail, and there are some other types of corridors that might be utilized to develop future projects, but this is one of the phases of that very long regional connectivity concept that we've been working on for a few years. If we do not have additional projects installed, if those are not possible, still think this is great benefit to the people in the area, and it will allow people, again, at the hospital and in the neighborhood to get out and enjoy this this kind of unique feature that has kind of been hiding in the woods for several years, but that we can reinvest in and bring new opportunity for the community. We've received some comments about the language in the interlocal. They're minor corrective comments. Brent and I have been working with both of the other partners. CHI would like review of the design. They're prepared to do the full transfer of the property to Omaha, but we'll get those kind of minor language updates finalized. We'll send this to Omaha for their city council, and then CHI is prepared to execute the agreement as well. So be glad to answer any questions about this specific piece or about how this connects into other projects that we've worked on in the area.
We can have a motion on this item.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Jack?
Eric, do you have any cost estimates for the NRD on this eventually?
We do. This is a relatively simple project because, again, as a rail corridor, it's already wide enough and flat enough, so we don't anticipate very much grading. I'm sorry, I don't have the construction cost estimate, but we do believe that the design contract will be less than the management approval so that we can move forward quickly with that. And so we do have a conceptual study that indicates those things. I can get you that information and bring it back to you if you'd like.
So is there any federal money involved with this?
There is no federal money on this. It's a short, short section of trail. The federal money would introduce more challenges than benefits, but the underpass is a high dollar intensity project, so we have intentionally separated the two so that this will be done by the time that gets ready in MAPA's budget. The estimate there is something like $2 million probably.
For the underpass?
Mm-hmm, for the underpass. If you look at old aerials, before 72nd was improved to the current condition, that was a rail underpass, and so we will just be reestablishing basically exactly what was there before.
And ultimately, will it travel east on Girard Street eventually too?
We are looking at some corridor options. Okay. The rail corridor, the point that it's at right there is basically the very top of kind of a big curve that slopes back down and around. There is some other rail corridor property further to the east that might be available. Mm-hmm. We'd need to talk with those property owners and then the city of Omaha about how that might work at 56th Street, 52nd Street, and then how we would continue further east. But we're working on those projects as well. None of them are ready for design and construction right now, but we're incorporating them into other things that are happening in the area. So we do intend for additional connectivity to be continued here.
Thank you.
Director Thompson.
That answers one of my questions. So the old rail line has been developed. Chopped up in houses or whatever.
There are, on the south side of Girard Street, kind of where the letter A is, there are about a dozen houses. So it would probably be a kind of side path on the south side of Girard Street. Then the rail corridor turns and heads back south southeast. Sorensen Parkway was on the rail for a significant portion, just kind of not from about 80th Street to about 52nd Street. Huh. So it's a little difficult to see. If you go to the aerial, you might be able to see it a little more. I can get you another map if you'd like. The as it continues further to the east, the rail corridor is still kind of over there. There are some places where it's not available, and side of Girard Street would be a good opportunity, but there are some other rail sections that we would like to investigate in the future.
And then, secondly, if we're going to, like, go north from A so Dr. Bradley can ride his bike out to Chelco all the way?
Again, to the west, once the underpass is established, you can make it to Keystone, and from Keystone you have access to the entire rest of the network. That's why this is such a beneficial location.
All right.
Any other questions? Director Bradford?
Well, just a comment. And you might have said that, but... if all approved, when would they break ground and when you think about completion?
We expect the scope of the design on this to be under the management authority, and we'd probably work to get a scope and fee from the consultant who did the conceptual work, so that would streamline the process there. We believe that the design could be completed by fall, bidding in the fall, construction beginning in 2024. Again, very little grading except for the slope on the west side, so I would expect this could be completed by about late summer or fall of 2024, so this should go very, very quickly because it's one property owner prepared to transfer to the city of Omaha, simplified design contract, simplified bidding, tree clearing in the winter, construction all of next year.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I got something just kind of a little outside
Director
that.
Fowler?
Flow estimation capacity. I know we do that throughout the entire network, if you will, on occasion. How much will this affect, and as we go forward, just can you walk me through that, how you look at that metric?
Yeah, we do intend to add bicycle and pedestrian counters to essentially all new trail sections moving forward. We don't have any data in this area about how many additional people might use this. The trail does follow the north side of Sorensen and wraps back down to 72nd and Sorensen, and I'm not sure if anybody's been there. Perhaps Director Bradley has been there. That is not a very pleasant place to be if you are a pedestrian or a bicycle user, and so the underpass there is specifically to move people away from the 72nd and Sorensen intersection. There is the possibility of some side path stuff on Sorensen in the future, but we'd really like to establish a corridor that is away from that very high capacity, high velocity road section. And so it's difficult to say how many people might use it. There also kind of aren't any trails east of 72nd and north of Sorensen, which is why we're focused on this area and continuing further east down to Riverfront. So there aren't creeks that make that entire connection, so it's difficult to project what will the specific next projects be. We have some ideas. But again, tough to tell how many people might use it. We will count, and we will get back to you after it's constructed, though.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Taser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number 9, Eric, you back up. Platte River Bridge Trail Agreement.
Thank you. We have two items back-to-back that are both about the Platte River Bridge Trail. If you've got the map, it should be the second page. Just as a reminder, this is between Bellevue and Plattsmith on Highway 34/75, the east side of the bridge. The first item here is what's called a trail agreement. It is with the local NDOT District 2 office because essentially all of the section of this project is on property owned by NDOT. And so they have an agreement that indicates we will take responsibility to operate and maintain both the trail sections and the structure. We're working on the language between the girders and the superstructure of the bridge itself, but that NDOT wants us to indicate that we are responsible for ongoing operations and maintenance of the trail portion of the bridge and the trail sections north and south. This is not something that we generally do, so we're working with District 2 on finalizing specific definitions of where that responsibility is. But again, we have an agreement that generally says we are responsible for the trail and the structure, and NDOT is working on incorporating some of those final language updates. Again, this is kind of an atypical step in a project because we generally do not construct projects on right-of-way owned by NDOT, but this is something that they have asked us. Now that we are getting close to bidding this project for construction, they want that agreement in place so that we can get the bid documents ready and sent out. So it's, again, kind of a new step in a project, but we feel good that the agreement represents how we have always intended this project to be designed, constructed, and then operated and maintained in the future. So this would authorize the general manager to execute the trail agreement with NDOT District 2, the local office, located on about 108th and L Street. They oversee and operate the NDOT projects in this area, including this bridge.
Thank you, Eric. We can have a motion.
I'll move staff recommendation.
Got a motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors.
Sure. I'm just confused that it's in Nebraska Department of Roads Bridge, and our path is on the bridge or attached to the bridge.
Get the map again. Yes.
So it's on their bridge.
Yes.
And they want us to maintain the path? Or what maintenance are we agreeing to do?
That's what Brent and I are working to finalize with the District 2 legal team. If you zoom in there, you can see on the right side of the bridge just a little bit, the piers were wide enough to allow for the girders. Girders replaced by NDOT, and we're working on a definition of what is the substructure and what is the superstructure. So I believe NDOT will remain responsible for the piers in the water and the seats and the girders, and we will take responsibility for only the superstructure, meaning the trail portion. That's right. And there will be some additional structural components, but on top of the girders. I think that's where we're drawing the line, is they take the girders and piers and down, except in the instance where anything that we do on top of the girders impacts something below. There are a couple lookout locations, and in those locations there will be some additional work down kind of below and on the pier. And so if the construction of the lookout location were to damage the pier, we would take responsibility for that. But we do not believe that will happen. We trust the structural design team that there won't be any challenges there. So we're working on finalizing exactly what the language is to define what is NDOT's responsibility and what is our responsibility. And I don't know, Brent, do you have any additional clarification, or do you feel like I've covered that?
Yeah, we're still working on it. As far as clarifying responsibilities, good luck.
We think we're very, very close. It's just the definition of...
Any other questions? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler? Yes.
Sherman?
Aye. Eric, you're up again.
This is the second item on the same project. This is the final plans and cost estimate for that same bridge structure. I spent some time on the previous item clarifying that trail agreement is with the local District 2 office. The federal funding is administered out of the local projects office in Lincoln, so this work is with the local projects office. The consultant has finished the plan set and is being prepared for bidding, the letting, which we have been working towards June. It seems like perhaps it will be after June, but we are getting very, very close. And so the final plan set, in order for the local projects office to finalize those bid documents and send them out for bids from contractors, they need a resolution approving the plans from the local project administrator, that's us, and that also includes the updated cost estimate. The updated cost number here is $4,071,900.04, and that is higher than when we originally began the project in about the fall of 2017. Some portion of that is inflation. Some portion of that is the other international instability in materials costs. But this is an 80% federally funded project. And so the local responsibility, the 20% that we have agreed to, that $800,000, we also have an agreement for cost share with a collection of other local agencies, Lower Platte South NRD, Bellevue, Plattsmith, Sarpy County, Cass County. And so there's a percentage breakdown of where the 20% will come from. The Papio entity is responsible for half of that 20% or 10%. And so for the overall cost of this project, the Papio entity's investment would be about $400,000. The other $400,000 would be divided among those five other partners. We've provided an update to those five partners with this cost estimate associated with these final plans. We'll go through bidding. Generally, NDOT does get pretty good bids based on the cost estimate that they get at their final plan submittal, and so we don't expect significant changes there. That is the cost estimate update is a portion of the final plan set, and the resolution does ask that we confirm that the NRD and the local sponsor approves both the plans and the cost estimate. So this is a recommendation to authorize the general manager to confirm that we approve the final plans and the final cost estimate to allow NDOT to then go out to bid for this project. And then we would expect the construction work to begin next year.
Thank you. We can have a motion on this item.
A motion for staff recommendation.
Motion. And a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Chairman?
Hi. I think that completes my report.
Nope.
One more.
Sorry.
Got one more what?
Still me.
Oh, okay. I was looking at the first page. Oh, okay. You up again, Eric. Sorry.
Great. Thank you. I'm trying to move quickly because this is the cost share programs, which sometimes takes a little while. We've made some significant updates to the cost share application process. The letter this year was streamlined down to just one page, all the information posted online. So the application process was quite a bit simpler, and essentially all of them have been digital this year. We do still communicate with the very small communities with a paper letter indicating where they can find the forms, but we're really trying to streamline this so that it's easier for them to apply, easier for us to review, easier to get the projects moving forward. That said, of the five programs that usually receive applications and recommendations at this time, the Urban Drainage Way Program was mentioned in the letter as not open for applications this year, and I think we talked about that a few months ago, because the Urban Drainage Way program had several large applications last year, and we have interlocal agreements specifying that we will partner on those projects over the next few years. So we did not receive applications in the Urban Drainage Way program. We also did not receive any applications in the lake dredging program, not because it wasn't available, just that no one has any lake dredging projects that they're looking for cost share on right now. So that leaves projects under three programs, the Urban Conservation Assistance Program, the Recreation Area Development Program, and the Trails Assistance Program. I'm going to try and group these together and describe them in total because they are nothing specifically out of the ordinary, but if you have questions about any specific project, let me know. Under the Urban Conservation Assistance Program, the City of Omaha has applied for cost share near the Pacific Street Bridge over the Big Papio. This is kind of a last-minute discovery. They have some drainage on the side of the bridge going down into a section of the Big Papio where we do provide some maintenance. This will help stabilize the bridge and help to avoid damage to the creek in the area where we've worked in the past. SID 276, Portal Ridge, is requesting assistance with some channel damage. This is on the downstream side of Giles Road. They had previously applied. We asked them to delay their application because the Giles Road culvert underpass for the Applewood Creek Trail was going to be constructed, and it would significantly change the creek. That is now done. The SID is asking for cost share to help stabilize the channel just downstream of that new trail underpass. SID 503 West Dodge Station has some pretty generic channel damage that's occurring, and they're asking for cost share to help stabilize the bank. And SID 555 Anderson Meadows Estates has kind of the same thing. Pretty standard erosion on the bank of a channel, so they will grade the channel to 2.5 to 3 to 1 and use rock at the toe of the slope. So these are all pretty straightforward projects. The recommendation is to approve all four projects to be included in the upcoming FY 2024 budget. And, Chairman, I'm not sure if you would like to take an action on this one now, or remind me how we generally do this. One per program, but all projects under the same program.
So that each
is separate. Yes. We have a motion on this item.
So moved.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I had one quick question. Directors. The dollar amount involved here is in line with what we've appropriated other years?
A little bit less. A couple. Let's see. Last year we only had $60,000, but this is pretty average for what we see in applications under this program. The dollar amount is capped to $30,000. So you can see the table that breaks down the total investment by the local partner in these projects and then our investments. It's relatively small. So it's this is in line with what we've seen in the past.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Kemp?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye.
Next program is the Recreation Area Development Program. We received applications from some small communities that we generally don't see projects from. So glad to see Blair, Hubbard, and La Vista. Not as small, but they don't always submit projects, so glad to receive those. Blair has asked for assistance with their restroom reconstruction project. Hubbard is also looking for assistance with their park restroom reconstruction or renovation. La Vista has asked for assistance with a portion of a comprehensive park upgrade, and this is the playground portion is what they're asking for cost share on because that is an eligible expense, but they're doing kind of a comprehensive set of investments in their park. Omaha is asking for some picnic facilities at Adams Park. They are also doing a comprehensive set of upgrades at Adams Park, an area where we've looked to make investments in the past, so we're glad to see them continuing that. I'm glad to see that these comprehensive upgrades are being done there. Omaha has also asked for assistance at, I believe it is Munley Park. It's just east of 60th Street, across from the new high school. It's kind of a open grassy area, and they're putting some new features into that that park. And so this is cost share on a couple of the facilities that would be added there. Papillion is adding a playground, doing a playground renovation at Schwer Park, as well as they've asked for cost share on the trail wayfinding study and plan. They had originally submitted that under the Trails Assistance Program, but talking with Amanda, we felt that was a better match to the planning description that is under the Recreation Area Program. So we moved that over to this program. It's a relatively small investment in planning. In the future, they might ask for cost share on some of the trail features that come out of that plan. And then lastly, South Sioux City at the Curry Park Playground. South Sioux City has been a great partner with a lot of our cost share programs over the years. They usually submit one or two applications. I'm glad to continue working with them on investments in a lot of their recreation facilities. So the recommendation is to approve all of those projects, and the table breaks down the local partner cost, the NRD cost, and the totals for each of those.
We can have a motion.
All motion.
Second the motion, staff recommendation.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the items? Directors? Director Thompson?
The Adams Park request, I mean, it's pretty general what they want. Hasn't that already been done, all that work? I mean, we've got a trail, Beltline Trails going.
That's right. They are making some additional improvements on the south side of the park, so some new picnic facilities. I think it's page 32 for you. The area that they've designated in their application specifically is kind of the area just to the east of the lake or wetlands area. So there's a new playground and some new picnic shelters that are being added. They're making a very significant investment in Adams Park, and I think some of that has to do with the investment that we've made in the Beltline. So I'm glad to be partnering with them on some more features being added to this park. So I don't know if you have that laser thing. There's three little picnic shelters in the small purple area. Is it this? Oops, nope. In the lower left portion of the map. Okay. Okay. This area right here, three picnic shelters and a little playground. And so that's the portion that they're asking for cost share on. And then you can see they're indicating some other investments across the entirety of the park. So there is, I think it's $600,000 is the total investments, and our program is capped at $50,000 as our cost share. So we're supporting a portion of the overall work that they're doing in the park.
Thank you.
Director Bradley, do you have a question?
Well, just a sort of a question, comment, and I know this is more with the city of Omaha than with us, Eric, but they took out all the Little League baseball fields. I've played at those Little League baseball fields as a little leaguer, and
It was right up here, and a couple of the people have mentioned that there used to be ball fields there. The major work that started the renovations in Adams Park were associated with the CSO project, and so the first investment was in the in the area of the stormwater and water quality management through the wetlands area here, and in order to enlarge that area, they do now have a high-hazard dam, which is right here. The Beltline Trail is going across the top of that, but the dam is located directly where the ball fields used to be, and so in order to make this stormwater improvement in the park, they needed to make some changes, and the land area necessary meant that the park was being replanned from ball fields over to wetlands and water quality improvement. And that was about 7 or 8 years ago, I believe.
Larry, I played there as an older leaguer.
Well, if you're going to lose them fields to something, I guess wetlands would be it.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Thompson?
Yes. Hi. Last program is the Trails Assistance Program. We've got a couple different applications. Fort Calhoun has been making investments in both recreation and trail connectivity kind of right in the center of town. We have worked with them to outline phases over the years, so this is phase 3 and 4. It connects directly to the band shell, the splash pad, and to two parks on each end of the community, so it's a great project. They've been doing a good job of implementing a new phase each year. Glad to receive this application and recommend it for cost share again this year. Omaha has requested cost share on the section of Keystone Trail from Democracy Park to Somerset Park. I think we might have talked in the past about there are kind of three large sections of the Keystone Trail to get from the current northern end at Democracy Park all the way up to Lake Cunningham. They have built one section in the middle. They are currently working on construction of the northern part from Somerset into Lake Cunningham. And then there are about 6 or 7 small pieces, which are reflected in the graphics that are included in the application, that will go from Fort Street up to Blair High Road, up past Northwest High School, and connect up to Somerset Park. So that means that if this is approved and they move forward to construction next year, by about the end of next year, the Keystone Trail will connect all the way into Lake Cunningham. And that has been a significant undertaking that the city has been working on for a number of years. We have encouraged them to move in that direction. Very glad to receive this application. It is a little higher dollar request. The total cost is $1,100,000, and they are asking for $557,000. But I do think that the interest in the Keystone Trail and seeing that connection all the way into all of the investments that have been made at Lake Cunningham will bring very, very significant benefits to a huge number of people. And so being able to say this is the last project that will connect Keystone to Lake Cunningham, you know, into the park, I think that's a great accomplishment. Very glad that the city has been moving forward with that, and glad to recommend this for cost share as well. There are some SID projects as well. SID 313 Garden Oaks has an outlot kind of on the side of their community. They would like to build a trail through there. It's a great use of the space. It's a setback. They can't really do anything else in the area, and they have some other recreation facilities included there as well. So that's a good project. It is very near a WFPO project near 180th Street on Beetle Creek. So one thing that we'll make sure and do is to make sure that the trail and any other recreation features are coordinated with the existing designs that are under review for the WFPO grade stabilization structure in that location. A little bit further back in time, this was the location of what at the time was called WP8. And so there has been some need for improved collaboration and communication, and we are making sure that this trail will not negatively impact the WFPO project that we have submitted already and that the NRD would lead after that funding is reviewed and approved. SID 328 Sumter Crossing is asking for a trail connection in their neighborhood, kind of bringing people out of the neighborhood and over toward Walnut Creek, an area that we made significant investment in the past. And there are now a number of trail connections coming in from adjacent neighborhoods, getting into the park to enjoy those facilities. So this is another neighborhood that would like better access to the park. And then lastly, South Sioux City is asking for a trail connection in the area of a school, the Cardinal Elementary School. So this is anticipated to be both a recreation feature, but also to provide safe access for kids who are walking to and from school, a great multi-purpose project. Glad to recommend that one as well. I think I did mention that the dollar intensity of the Keystone Trail is a little higher, but overall, the total dollar investment here is not significantly out of line with what we've seen in the past. Last year specifically was $688,000, and this year the requested and recommended total cost share from the NRD is about $1 million. As a reminder, the decision to not receive applications in the Urban Drainage Way program means that the total cost share application funding is significantly less than we generally would have seen. We will see some of those carryover projects broken down over the next few years, but we do think that there is sufficient budget available to meet all of the needs for the projects that were requested, and that's why they're all recommended. And so we recommend that these five trail projects be included in the budget and then hopefully move forward to construction after that.
Move to staff recommendation.
Motion?
Second.
And a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to any of the items? Directors?
I have a quick question.
Directors,
so you're saying on this last bunch, there is no dollar limit for any individual item, just whatever we can think we can afford?
That's right. The policy guidance on the Trails Assistance Program does not have a dollar cap. And so we work to make sure that we are not recommending more than we believe is in line with what we've seen in the past. And trail projects sometimes do have higher dollar cost. We have done one in the past where I think the cost share was closer to $800,000, and we broke that down with an interlocal for 2 years that included a significant amount of trail and a bridge in the area of a park that we had worked on. So $557,000 for the Keystone Trail is not the largest Trails Assistance Program cost share request that we've seen. We think it's in line with what we've seen in the past and the benefits of the project.
Are they bringing some sort of engineer's estimate to you to get that number?
Yes. I think they are at 60% plans, so this is a strong estimate. I think they have strong confidence in the number that they have right now. The location of the trail isn't really – there's not a lot of decision about where things will go. There's a couple road crossings, which will be different for the Keystone Trail. There currently are no at-grade crossings, so those are kind of new features that will deserve some additional safety and design considerations. But again, there's not really another way to get to Cunningham. The bridges are too low to make the trail underpass work, and so I think that's where they've got a pretty good idea of the cost estimate right now.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Hi. I think I'll be
Thank
correct
you.
This time to say this.
And that's
again.
It.
Bridge, can we have 1 minute?
1 minute. We're going to take a two-minute break here, please.
Bring back over here.
Is he here for salmon fishing or anything? Oh, there's only one call. We're called a meeting order at 4:58 of the FDL Subcommittee. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is on the back wall, as previously stated. I have three quorum calls.
Here.
Davidson?
Here.
Henningsen?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
And Chairman?
Here. Item four, adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Item five, proof of publication, meeting notice. I have it before me. Item six, discussion of current bond market conditions. John Winkler and Paul Greger, D.A. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, committee members. This agenda item is Chairman Sapinski and I have been had a couple conversations with Mr. Greger. Paul Greger represents D.A. Davidson, who has done all the district's bonding over the years. And we've actually been quite successful in saving, I think now the new estimates, Paul has them, it's, you know, over $6 million in savings on interest payments. So we have an opportunity to possibly save even more. And so Paul's here to kind of explain that process and what the investment that the district would have to make as far as paying some professional service fees and things like that. So I'll turn it over to Paul.
All right. Thanks, John.
Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. Again, Paul Greger with D.A. Davidson. I have with me Tyler Mullen of the Baird Holm Law Firm, who represents the district and has for a very long time on all of the bond issues that we've had the pleasure of working on together. As Mr. Winkler indicated, through the board's good work and action, this board has saved taxpayers just under $7 million over the years in refinancing activities alone. The last two refinancings we did together were in 2019 and 2020. They were very successful. At the time, we sold taxable bonds to take advantage of the low taxable rates in the marketplace, and we refinanced existing tax-exempt bonds. We were able to do that based on the current tax code at the time, and we really never thought we'd even talk about those bonds again. Those bonds were sold at interest rates. Some of those bonds had rates that were below one, some were in the twos. But what's happened in the general market is that so many issuers like yourselves sold taxable bonds in years like 2019 and 2020 at such low nominal interest rates. And over the past couple of years, we've seen interest rates increase somewhat rapidly. So what that has done is it has devalued the bonds that are held by insurance companies, investment funds, and banks, and in some cases, individual investors. So this sounds strange when you first hear it, but what we've seen in certain areas is that issuers of bonds have gone through the steps to make a tender offer or an offer to the bondholders that own the securities and say, hey, if you would like to get out of those bonds, we would be willing to pay a slight premium over today's market value to redeem the bonds if you're interested. And we really don't have a way of forecasting what that interest would be other than to go through the exercise and see what types of bondholders would come to the table and say, yes, we would tender our bonds back at the prices that you're offering. We would work, if you chose to do this, we would work with you and work with management on the tender offer, making sure that whatever was offered to the public would be prices that would make sense to turn around and issue a new set of tax-exempt bonds to pay the cost of redeeming these bonds from the bondholders. In the previous refinancings that we've done together, the estimated savings amounts were easier to predict because we knew what you were paying on the current bonds, and we had a pretty good idea what the new bonds might price.
In this case, it's real difficult for me to give you a good estimate, because if I knew everybody was going to tender the bonds, I could tell you what I think rates are today and how I think the math would work and say, I think you can save $500,000 or whatever the number is. I can't do that today. But what I can do is I can offer to work with Tyler to put documents together, meet with the rating agency and refresh the bond rating, and engage an information agent who would be charged with communicating the tender opportunity to the bondholders. And if we did that, we would expect the cost. We have a proposal from Globic, who's an information agent, and they would charge a fee of $10,000. And we would also have to pay a discounted rating agency fee in the amount of about $15,000. But if the bond issue, the negative thing here would be if the bond issue didn't work out and we didn't have enough people tender, or the financing just didn't make any sense and we decided to pull it. Tyler and I would not charge the NRD any expenses, but we would have there are certain fees that we just couldn't avoid. We would have a minimum fee of $10,000 to Globic, the information agent, and a minimum fee due to Standard & Poor's, the rating agency, and there's nothing we can do about those. Our offer to the NRD would be, that would be worst-case scenario, so we would like to be on the bike with you and have skin in the game with you. So if that went badly, DA Davidson would be prepared to split those out-of-pocket expenses with the NRD. Again, this is not a... It's a relatively new concept. We haven't seen any Nebraska issuers successfully do this yet, but we have a few clients that are all talking about it at the same time. We've come to maybe three or four clients that we work with in Nebraska, and we're having similar conversations right now. We've seen these types of financings be successfully done in states like Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Illinois in the recent couple of months. So we do have some precedent for thinking that it could work. But again, it's a way that we think it's a creative approach to trying to take advantage of what's out there in the marketplace. I don't know if there's a lot of pressure to do it right now or not. If asked, I would say I don't know. If you like the idea, I don't know if it matters if we do it next month or in 6 months. I really don't know. My thought would be is if the idea is intriguing to you, we'd go to work and start putting it together. It would take us a little time. We couldn't ask for action on documents before next month, May, and then we could come to you with a timeline if that's something you wanted to do. If you wanted to sit on it for a while and just revisit it, that's fine too. Since it is a unique idea and it's being done in different parts of the country, I wanted to make sure that DA Davidson and Barrett Holm were the ones here discussing the idea with you. We wouldn't want to read in the paper that one of our competitors came up with something that we weren't smart enough to do. So that's why we're here. It's to keep the free flow of communication going with our clients and bring opportunities to you that might make sense. So with that, I do my best to answer any questions.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
I mean, by consent, you can just, if you want us to go forward to explore. I mean, and I think this is the simplest explanation I've come up with as far as how this works, is we're taking advantage of the chaos in the bond market, right. And Main Street's taking advantage of Wall Street with this, so I think it's something maybe to explore.
I have a question for Paul, though. explain to me, they were issued taxable bonds, and now they're non-taxable. Why were they taxable then?
Good question.
Why not? No.
Should this be a lawyer question?
Sure. Yeah, great question. Tyler Mullen, Barrett Holm. So essentially what happens is these bonds have been issued in 2016 and 2017 initially, and they weren't callable at the time when we could take advantage of the great interest rates in the taxable market. So we couldn't do those on a tax-exempt basis at that time, so we did them on a taxable basis.
Okay.
This deal will be a current refunding, and so we are able to take advantage of tax-exempt
rates. They are
rates.
Callable on the new
they're not,
if you had a new issue?
They're not callable yet. That's part of the – that's why we're doing – that's why Paul has offered the – or came up with the idea of the tender offer. If the bondholders volunteer to sell the district the bonds, then what happens is, you know, district can buy the bonds, waive the call features, they're and retire them, and then they're no longer outstanding after that point. So we can take advantage of the tax exempt rates at that for this issue.
You might touch on the tax code changes of 2018.
Sure. And so historically, bond issues could be refunded on what was called an advanced refunding. All bonds have a time period for which the issuers like yourself can't refund bonds. And so bond issues historically, you could do a taxable advanced refunding on a tax-exempt basis one time. The Tax Act in 2018 got rid of that ability to do that. So the only time you could issue tax-exempt debt to refi outstanding bonds were if you did it within a 90-day period of your call date. So we couldn't do that on the 19 and 20 issues, but using this tender offer feature, we can use it for this deal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm glad you gentlemen are here. I have a question probably many taxpayers are wondering as well. For our bonds, and this might be not quite tied to this particular item at the moment, maybe so, if Congress does not raise the debt limit, are we going to be okay with what we have at the moment? And should we move with this before or after that scenario?
I guess... My thought would be that the statutes give you the authority to levy up to 1 cent to make payments on your bonds. It's expressly authorized in the state statutes, so I don't think that would have an effect on your ability to repay these bonds.
Okay. Just wanted to know. Thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned that other states around us, but Wisconsin, Georgia, Illinois, what kind of participation are they getting when they go out? Are they getting good feedback? Are they getting
good question? So again, I've had extensive, I spent about 2 months researching this. I think I brought the idea to Mr. Winkler, and then he had some good questions, and I said, I don't know if this is a good idea or not yet, but I need to really run it to ground. So I've gotten to spend a couple months researching it, and I've had good conversations with industry experts around the country, and most importantly the information agent Globic. And What I've been told is, generally speaking, I don't like to say generally speaking on these types of issues, but that's borrowing their words, on financings like this, they're seeing when they get good tender participation, it's between 20% and 30% of what's outstanding.
So what kind of participation would you need for this to be successful in this area? About the same 20% to 30%?
I don't know. That's the hard question, and here's why.
We wouldn't know that.
You've got bonds that are maturing throughout the maturity schedule. So it depends on where that 20 or 30 or some other percentage comes in. It's possible we get 0%. But if we got 20 or 30%, you've got about $50 million outstanding in what we're looking at. Okay. If we got 20% outstanding, or if we got 20% participation, and it was in the correct parts of the yield curve and the financing made sense to where we would generate positive present value savings, then that could be a good deal.
So then our risk is $10,000 plus $15,000 in that
ballpark? Your risk is 10.
10, okay.
What we're looking at, if we do the deal on a larger scale, and here I'll give you a little, I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but we're too late now. If we signed up for a rating fee on this deal, it would be about $15,000, maybe $20,000. But what we've been directed by the rating agency to do is apply for a rating on a smaller financing. That way we're not committing to too much. Because if we pull the financing, they're going to discount the rating fee to 70% of that number. So if I come to them with a smaller issue like $5-6 million, hoping to do a $10-20 million deal, but if I come with a small number, then they're going to write up the contract to be $15,000, and then if the deal doesn't go through, they're going to charge us 70% of that number, which is about $10,500, I think. So that's the guidance I got from them. So call it $10,000 there, plus another $10,000. To Globic, the information agent. I asked if they've got any flexibility if the thing doesn't work. And he said, no, not really, because he goes, you know, by the time they get to that point, they've done their job, right? They've done all the work. He says it's kind of like flipping on a switch. We've done everything that you've asked us to do. We can't influence the bond market. We can't influence the bondholders, and we can't entice them. So we're just providing the information, and we're making sure that every single owner of those bonds receives the information. That's the most efficient way of getting that out. So depends on where those numbers come in. I mean, a deal that has 40% participation in the wrong part of the curve could look worse than a deal that has 10% of participation in the sweet spot of the curve. What we've also learned is, generally speaking, the insurance companies, many insurance companies will have already bought those bonds and matched up those securities with future obligations. So they have to match up with their claims. So that's a closed issue. Many of them are not looking to tender bonds. They're buy and hold. Other community banks, we've been told, have been trying to generate some liquidity in the last 30 days because banks are certain banks are positioning themselves to increase their liquidity levels to protect themselves from some of the things we saw in March. So there could be some interest there. I've heard of banks unloading bonds at deep discounts because they want to improve liquidity. I don't know if all of that's already been done. I feel like if we were doing something very similar to this idea, the day after the Silicon Valley Bank issue was announced, I feel like we'd have a lot of participation from banks. But you can't time it that closely. So, long answer. I'd be happy to see a 10-15% participation in the right spot. But again, I really don't know what it looks like, and that's one of the reasons that we would want to be on the bike with you, and we'll split the fees if this thing doesn't work out. I think there's good upside for the district if it should work out. But again, we understand that it may not, so we're willing to put a little money where our mouth is, I guess.
So you can't float the idea to the bond purchasers, but you know who the holders are, and you know which holders are likely or not likely, or
great question.
May have, you know, if they're insurance companies, it's already obligated, they can't.
I don't know who the holders are. I know who we sold the bonds to.
Okay. Because they could have transferred, and you don't.
Because they trade in the secondary markets, and there's no way for me to track
that. You can't get that information.
Right.
Thank you.
I can look at the order books and say, okay, I think we sold about roughly 30% of these to these types of bondholders, and they're not likely to tender, but I can't. I don't have a reliable way to track that information down without going through the process.
Thank you.
Any further questions? We have the manager's recommendation that the subcommittee recommend to the board of directors this rather lengthy resolution.
That's the next item.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
The next agenda.
Yeah, this was just for discussion.
This was just for discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item 7, Nebraska Class Public Investment, John Linkler,
Aaron Burke. Thank you. So talk about assets and investments. The Nebraska Cooperative Liquid Asset Security System, it's called Nebraska Class or Trust. We have an interlocal agreement here for the purpose of public fund investment, and it was organized in 2022. It's similar to NPAIT, which the NRD participates in. The class portfolio is restricted to investments allowed for Nebraska public agencies under state statutes. And it obviously prioritizes the preservation of capital and maintenance of liquidity. So to be able to participate in the NPAIT, we had this similar resolution that was presented to the board. And I don't know if Aaron is here or not. Maybe not, which is fine.
I said very early on.
Oh. I thought Tim had him on the phone. But
I was trying to get him here.
So this is similar. It's new. But what it does is it gives the district another investment vehicle to probably play a little bit of the interest rate game of what The bank is giving us what NPAID is giving us, and then what this new vehicle is giving us. So, and I said we may not invest a dime in it, or we may find some attractive interest rates that we put in there for, you know, 6 months or a year, similar to what we do for NPAID. Carrie does a great job of tracking those monthly and trying to maximize what money we have invested and to move those around to maximize those returns. Brent has reviewed all of the documents, so we're fairly comfortable that this would be a great vehicle to have available if, in fact, that we can maximize what we do. So happy to answer any questions. But the resolution is lengthy, but it is similar to what we've done in the past with NPAID, which has been around for quite a while.
Can we get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Anybody from the general public wish to make comments? Directors? Roll call.
Mason?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes. Item 8, RFP for auditing services. Carrie. Hurry up, Carrie! Thank you.
Under current district policy, we request proposals for auditing services every 5 years, which we advertised in the World Herald on February 27th and March 6th, as well as posted to our website. We did receive one bid from Bergen KDV for fiscal years 2023 through 2027 at a price of $53,500 for the first year and increasing $3,500 each year after that, for a total over the five-year period of $302,500. We recommend that the board accept this contract, and Jane Garlitz is here as well to answer any questions.
Any
discussion from the general public? Questions?
Just one question. Are you concerned that we only received, I mean, I know we have a great firm. I'm not saying, are you concerned we only received one bid?
There are not that many firms locally who still provide government auditing services, and I think the ones that do are struggling with the same staffing issues we are and are working on the clients they already have.
Well, I'm happy we got this bid, so.
Did a good job for us.
Yeah.
Thank you for your work, and we'll roll call.
McCormick? Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes.
Item 9, thank you, Carrie. Item 9, Washington County Rural Water Customer Contract Cost Account is 10014080, over 110%. Justin.
Good evening, directors. I come to you tonight to ask for forgiveness. We had budgeted $90,000 this year for customer contract costs, which basically incorporates buying all the meter pits, the meters, basically any component, the installation of those meter pits from our contractor, as well as the rebates that we pay out to the city of Blair every year. So basically just use the same historical number we've used the last few years, and it had worked. Obviously, the current market conditions we have with materials, supplies, and ever-changing costs have made it a little difficult for budgeting in the rural water this last couple years, especially this year. So you're probably going to see me again next month. So what had happened is we have to order these materials through municipal supply. This last year, they say it's been 6 months to a year for delivery, and that has actually been true. So we ordered some more materials here this last, it was probably December, January time frame. They said they should be here in August. They showed up this month. So it's one of those things. It's first come, first serve. If we don't buy it, somebody else is going to. And obviously, we are getting a lot of connections in Washington County currently, so we need to have these materials on hand. So unfortunately, I just have to come back and ask you guys for more money so we can continue the good work we do in Washington County.
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
Any discussion from the general public? Directors, roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes.
Thank you, directors.
Thank you.